No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here again today. And we've got a busy show, obviously, to get right down to business. We've got a lot of the stuff going on with McDaniels and the coaching hire, the ups and downs of the 24-hour period that we've experienced. And with me today, we've got Stampede Blue's own Andrew Aziz. Andrew, what's going on, my man?
Howdy, howdy. Looking forward to this interesting podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. This should be fun. This should be fun because I'm hoping that we can get some people to ring us up. We are taking your guys' calls just about whenever they come in at 929-477-3993. So if you guys are listening live and you want to call in, that's how you do it. We'll get to talking on the air and we'll have a good time with that. But I mean, let's kind of jump through these hoops real quick, Andrew. I mean, we started off the day hearing about Mike Mularkey getting fired in Tennessee, which, I mean, and I will admit it, I bid on it. I went right to the assumption that this is not good for the Colts if they're really trying to get Josh McDaniels. I mean, what were your thoughts? Did you think, not a big deal, or did this seem like, oh, shit, we're going to lose him?
Well, first of all, what a bunch of hurdles we've had. Like, just the NFL in general has had to go through the last 24 hours, all the coaching changes. I mean, Mularkey, I mean, all the stuff that, I mean, he wins a playoff game and he gets fired, and, you know, you get a guy like Marv Lewis who hasn't won a playoff game in 15 years and he's still around. I mean, so just that initial blow kind of shocked me. But then you have, you know, Shurmur getting hired. So all that was crazy. And then my initial reaction to Mularkey was, yeah, since their GM has a relationship with McDaniels, I thought, man, they're going to go all in on McDaniels. But And then when the Rappaport announced that the Colts are going to get McDaniels, I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, so the Titans are already out of the McDaniels sweepstakes? Are they still going to go after him because the Patriots are still in the playoffs? Something feels really shady about this whole thing, but it's been a really weird 24 hours, 12 hours even.
Right, yeah. Say, heck, since I woke up this morning, it was basically on. And that was one of the things. It's like everybody continues to say, well, the Titans can't talk to McDaniels until after the AFC Championship game. But it's like, I don't know. Why does that matter when he has such a strong relationship with John Robinson, the GM of the Titans? I mean,
I bet Robinson has McDaniels' phone number and they'll text each other in the next couple of weeks. Like, that's such BS when they're saying they're not going to talk after. They're talking
right
now.
If they haven't already, previous to now. I mean, how is that not something that comes up like, well, let's see. If we fire Mike, then, you know, hey, you know, do you have interest in coming here? You know, because, I mean, come on.
Fire Mularkey without a plan, then they're just a really poorly run organization because you can't just fire your coach without a plan.
Right.
So
well,
they fired him thinking McDaniels. Hopefully they have a backup. Otherwise, they're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're looking at Vrabel right now. They're looking at LaFleur, the OC in LA. I mean, so they're looking at some guys too. But I'm just surprised because it really just turned on a dime, like you said, like you touched on. It goes from, you know, everybody, and like I said, I bit because I wrote the article that said I think the Colts are going to end up losing McDaniels. And I wrote it quick because I knew that it was going to be instant. That's what everybody's mind was going to go to. And the next thing you know, within just a few hours, it's like, nope, the Colts are still the favorite to land McDaniels. And I'm like, wait, really?
Yeah.
Someone
explain that. Funny.
To me.
It's funny because I think at one time today, the article I wrote and the article you wrote were right next to each other. So it was Titans fire Mularkey, expect to go off McDaniels, then Colts expected to hire McDaniels. You're like, what the hell? It's like we're in a Twilight Zone episode, you know? So
right. It definitely didn't take long. I mean, it just didn't. But there's a couple of things that, you know, we should bring up, okay? So we've got the talk of McDaniels coming to the Colts now. That seems to be strong. It seems like just as many people who wrote in their tweets, looking at you, Ian Rappaport, you know, Schefter, all you guys that did the same thing. Because if you put some of their tweets next to each other today, they're going to look pretty strange, just like our articles did. I mean, they go
the whole
from
thing is strange.
Yeah, but they go from McDaniels, you know, this is, you know, something interesting now that Tennessee's opened up, and the next thing you know, you've got, you know, them saying that they think that McDaniels is a lock for the Colts. I mean, so it's kind of like, okay, so we've got these guys saying that, but then they bring out that there are a couple guys that McDaniels will likely bring with him as coordinators.
Yeah.
A quarterback's coach from Oakland named Jake Peets, who a lot of people don't know about, but I'm going to give you some pretty cool little information on him as well. Sure. And not to mention Eberflush, who is the linebackers coach, I believe, or was the linebackers coach for Dallas.
The Cowboys and the passing game coordinator, yeah.
Yeah. So here's a couple little tidbits that I got from a couple people after I reached out who cover the team pretty closely that could give us a little bit of information on these guys that we didn't already know. I did share an article from Blogging the Boys earlier today on Twitter for those of you that want to go back to my timeline and kind of read up on him. He's an interesting guy. There's a lot to him. But it does say that he ran the Cowboys coverages last year. He has heavy influences from Ryan and the Kiffin coaching trees. Now, what does that mean? That tells us that this guy's well-versed in both base defenses. That's a good thing,
right,
folks, because for all the crap that we've heard about Pagano and, you know, whatever it was called, the whatever 3-4 that he was doing, there was just no
monster.
Yeah, there was just nothing to it. It was strictly a 3-4 base with, it seemed like, very little intricacies were in there, and it just didn't seem to mesh well anyways. But further along the line with Eberflus, it says that he can coach any position on the defense. He's a meticulous studier, which is something that I think that the Colts really need on defense as well. Basically a teacher. He doesn't really say that – he basically just says, you know, he's scheme efficient. You know, he can basically run whatever. I like that for the Colts because that opens up a lot of possibilities. And it also makes me believe anyways – up front that we're going to have a guy calling defenses who could possibly be finally one of those guys who uses his assets on that side of the ball to structure his defense and not the other way around, structuring the defense and then forcing, you know, them to bring in talent to fit it. So I love that aspect of it. And he basically says that he's malleable and that, you know, Sean Lee, who was the linebackers coach, or sorry, linebacker there in Dallas, you know, swore by him, like thought he was the best thing, you know, living. But there's another guy, this Jake Peets that I was telling you about, quarterback's coach from Oakland. He was a senior offensive assistant in 2015 with Oakland, assistant quarterback's coach last year. And then this past season, he was the quarterback's coach. But here's something that people may not understand or not have known about him quite yet. He was the offensive quality control and wide receivers assistant in 2014 with the Washington Redskins. Can anybody tell me who the offensive coordinator was there?
Redskins,
Sean McVay.
2014, Kyle. Yeah, it was McVay, wasn't it? And then Shanahan was the year before.
Right. So we've got a possible connection, if you want to call it that, with Sean McVay, one of the brightest offensive minds in the league right now. I think that that's a quality hire there. I mean, we could, granted, McDaniels coming in is probably going to call his plays, but we are looking at a real possibility of having some nice scheme, some, you know, unpredictable play calling on both sides of the ball. What are your thoughts on these guys, man? Cause I'm kind of stoked about them, even though didn't know a thing about them 24 hours ago, and that no BS. I mean, I tell you guys this all the time, whether it's draft, whether it's something else, anything under the sun, I'll talk about what I know, but if I don't know anything, I'm not going to BS you guys and act like I know what's going on, because I don't, you know, if I don't, I say I don't. But these two guys, just from the little bit that I've learned about them from these guys who seem to be pretty high on them, you know, that's, you know, interesting to me and makes it look like McDaniels has his, you know, his stuff together as he's getting ready to, you know, take his second head coaching job.
So did you catch all that, Colts fans? Just first off, it's obvious you do your homework. Pete did not know much about him, so I'm not really going to talk about him too much. I'm just going to let the fans just I'm not really going to say much about Pete. What I will say about Eberflus is Yeah, Sean Lee, Jalen Smith, Anthony Hitchens. I mean, you look at the guys he's coached. It's always a pretty quality group, the Dallas Cowboys linebacker core. The group that always seems to bring them down is the secondary. Then on top of that, you know, you spoke about the Monty Kiffin, the Kiffin tree. Well, I guess it's Monty Kiffin and the Ryan tree. So he does have experience in both. What I'm really looking forward to seeing is who are they going to sign in free agency? Who are they going to draft? Because unless they run a multiple system, I mean, the free agent signings that we're going to see this year are really going to tell us what type of defense they want to run. Eberflus right now, we don't know if he's going to technically be the DC, but if he is the guy in charge of the defense, I mean, it's going to be his say for the personnel. So, again, I'm just watching what type of signings we're going to get from him. But, yeah, since 2011, he's been the linebackers coach. 2016, he was the passing game coordinator. He spent two years with the Cleveland Browns as their linebackers coach. He's been around the league before that. That's as far as I got back. There's not too much information. I don't know if you caught any more information about Eberflus. Am I pronouncing it right, by the way?
We're on the same page because it's whatever you want it to be. I don't know.
Remember, we have trouble pronouncing Monachino. It's like Monachino. And it's like, I mean, they seem to pick these guys with the names that have like six pronunciations.
Right.
But no, in terms of Eberflus, it seems like, well, I was reading that blog in the Boys article they're saying on him. They said he was the most valuable free agent the Cowboys have this year.
Right.
So, I mean, that just tells you a lot about his worth to the team. I bet you Rod Marinelli probably leans a lot on him since he's the passing game coordinator. Rod Marinelli named him the passing game coordinator after they changed DCs. He's been the linebackers coach for years. Like I said, Sean Lee has got to be one of the best linebackers in the league when he's healthy.
Oh, I absolutely believe that.
And Jalen Smith had a pretty solid year last year. I mean, sometimes it's, I never like just looking at the players and seeing if they're good or bad and then saying the coach must be good or bad, but it's worth at least noting whether the players he coaches are good. If you got crap players and, you know, it doesn't look good on the coach, but at least if he has good players, you know, it looks good on him. So he's definitely had some good players over there. Even Bruce Carter, who was a second-round pick, I believe, in 2013, you know, he had a couple quality seasons with the Cowboys. Then he left and he became irrelevant, but he had a couple of good years with the Cowboys too. I just think it's exciting. The one thing I'll say about this whole McDaniels thing, and we can all speculate or project what's going to happen, but what I really like about it, not to try to change too much of the tides here, but it's the relationship that he has with Ballard seems very good. Same agent, you know, it seemed like Ballard wanted him from the very beginning, interviewed him pretty early on. I think when you look around the league, and you see which teams are the most successful over the last decade, it's the teams that have the strongest head coach and general manager relationship. Now, you look at the Patriots, their head coach is their general manager, but you look at Seattle and Baltimore as maybe the two of the best teams over the last decade. And you have John Harbaugh and Ozzie Newsome, and you have Pete Carroll and John Schneider, two teams with really, really strong relationships. I think that's extremely important because you saw in San Francisco when they had their issues with the, you know, Jim Harbaugh in the front office. It screwed up the entire team. They had an 8-8 record that year, and that was a much better team than what that record said. So I think right off the bat, if you had to take one thing away from this McDaniels hiring today, besides all the offensive scheme stuff, all the coaching hires over anything, it's that it seems like he has a good relationship with Ballard right now, and it's not going to be any cutthroat stuff like Pagano and Grigson.
Right
now, I would say that. So,
yeah. And I'm hopeful for that, but like we had been for how long had we heard that, you know, there was a connection between the two, but nobody knew what the hell the connection was, right? I mean, I didn't know that they shared agents until the past, like you said, you know, just recently.
Exactly.
And so I kept seeing people say there's a connection there. Anytime I'd ask anybody, like, what is the connection you're talking about? And they just, is it a personal connection? Or because I can find a working.
They both are staff members of the NFL. That's what everyone thought. connection.
Right. And I couldn't find a working relationship between the two in football. So I just couldn't figure out that maybe they're just buddies. I don't know. You know, maybe that explains kind of why Chris Ballard was, you know, doing some trading with the Patriots or – why he kind of maybe tried to mend fences with the organization after the crap that happened with Grigson and Deflategate and all that other BS. I mean, so I don't, yeah. I didn't know. Finally, we get the thing about, you know, that they share agents. And I was like, okay, there's at least something. But not to mention, it says that they've built a relationship over the past year. And that kind of, you know, Chris Shepard today wrote something on there about that. That's why he feels that Chris Ballard, you know, had McDaniels targeted most of this entire process.
Yeah. No, he had to have had. And there's one thing I read from my my former boss, Josh Wilson, and it was a really, really great point. It was that over the last 2 years, and this is, you know what, I give a lot of crap to Ursay, but I'll tip my hat to him on this. For the last 2 years, the Colts got the hottest GM candidate, and they got the hottest head coach candidate. Credit Ursay, whoever runs the coaching search or the GM search, because they got two good ones. Or at least they got two really sought after people. We don't know necessarily if they're going to be good. Who knows? 5 years down the line. But at least right now they got the guy who everybody wanted for GM and for head coach. So I'll tip my hat to that crazy old man, because sometimes he hits the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. And I think that most of us felt like he did with Ballard. It's amazing the difference in trust when you see. What everybody thought and said and how we all reacted to anything just about that Grigson did or said, or, you know, however he acted. Now with Ballard, it's completely different. Most of those people, even the people who are contrarian to a lot of what goes on with the Colts, because they still want to hammer home that we've got a crazy owner and he's a big issue, but he's not the issue. You know, he hit the mother load with Ballard, and we all feel like that. I don't know. I've only heard we had a caller last week, and he said something about that he had heard a lot of negative about Ballard. I'm not sure, you know, if that was on another, you know, time warp, like if we were bending space and time there, because I'd never heard anything negative about Ballard at all. So
yeah, the thing I said last week about Ballard was that we can't, you know, we can't. What was my point again? It was that I'm trying to remember what I said about him last week. It was along the lines of, we can't necessarily just, you know, close our eyes and I wish I remember my point, but I was trying to say that we can't be all in on Ballard right now. We have to let the process wait out. But even when I said that, I couldn't think of one negative thing about Ballard that was said or reported or anything. It's all been positive so far. I think from a GM perspective, he had a pretty damn good year. The free agent signings that he signed were phenomenal, and his draft picks were pretty great too. I mean, Marlon Mack, Malik Hooker, Quincy Wilson, when they wanted to use him, Pagano didn't let him out on the field, but when Wilson was out on the field, he was pretty good. Hairston was pretty good too. So I think from a GM perspective, Ballard had a great year, and the signings made impacts. I mean, Sheard was phenomenal. Hankins was great. Woods, I mean, maybe the most unsung, underrated guy on the entire team this year. Just phenomenal two-gap guys. So many games, so many weeks. So from his perspective, I mean, he killed it this first year. And now this McDaniel signing, I mean, so far so good from him. I cannot imagine, I'm talking fast right now, but I'm just, because there's so many thoughts in my head about Ballard right now that I just want to spit out. But there's so many positives so far from year one from Ballard.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We're going to take a quick 5-second break here. We're going to come back with our first caller of the show. Thank you guys for coming back to the Colts Cast. We've got our first call for the show. Caller from 765. What's going on? You're on the Colts Cast.
Matt, this is Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing, man? How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you, man. I'm good. Hey, I just want to kind of echo what you guys are saying about Ballard. I was just having some thoughts of my own on him. His work up to this point of being GM, he's kind of been a scout. He's kind of prided himself in being a scout. And I really am excited about that, because coming into this free agency, there's got to be a lot of guys that he's had a hand in scouting. He knows a lot about. I like how detailed he is about things. When we got the free agents this year, I don't know who was a Colts fan when we signed Al Woods that we were jumping up and down and singing his praises. But then we see the guy play on the field and we all change our mind. You know, I have to say the same thing with John Simon. I was a little excited about it just because I'd seen some of the games and seen John play a little bit, but it wasn't something like, wow, we signed John Simon. Like, you know, this, we, you know, let's mm-hmm. get excited. Let's buy season tickets. I like that as his background. He comes from that kind of scouting and looking at players and talent. And that's not really a question, I guess. I just wanted to
piggyback
off what you guys were saying about Ballard.
That's the key, right? That's where he's done. That's where he was basically born into his NFL self. Not only the scouting area, but he learned how to deal with people. And this is why he's attractive to
extremely
guys
important.
Coming in. And I mean, that's everything when you're out and you're trying to bring guys in to play for you. Not only are you trying to get their services of their talent, but you're trying to get their trust. And Ballard has said it several times, the locker room is always watching. The guys who are full of it and the guys who aren't real players and the guys who don't want to put 100% of their time into it, those guys aren't going to make it. And he's going to make sure that he doesn't offer those guys more than what they deserve, because the rest of the team who's doing that, those are the guys that deserve it. And I think that that's excellent from your GM. It seems like he continues to say everything the right way. He continues to bring out all the right points, but none of it ever feels forced.
Yeah.
I'll just say
too
that the players don't BS. You want, look at Pat McAfee and the way he spoke about Gregson. It was like he was talking about Lucifer, you know. So they don't BS. And regarding Ballard, just to go back on what I said before, what were his signings this year? Hankins, Woods, Hunt, Simon, Sherd. I'm missing one here. Bostic. Anything else I'm missing?
Butler.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, you look
Marcus
at all
Hunt.
The guys. Let's just take the free agents, the unrestricted guys he signed. All had, by every measure, statistical, the just watching them on film, you know, the analysts seeing them, all of them had positive impacts this year. Even Hunt. I said this last week. I was shocked when they signed Hunt. I was like, man, this guy was the most overrated player in the draft. Like, he was a second-round pick, like, in 2013, whatever it was. And I was like, man, was not expecting much of him. He killed it this year. And
he really
Woods
did.
Was, like I said before, great. Hankins, phenomenal. Simon and Sherd were great. And even Bostic got great. It was really good at the end of the last 5-6 weeks of the year. So every signing this year he made was great. And you compare him to a guy like Gregson, who signs Trent Cole for, what, $6 million a year? Who else? I mean, the list goes on and on with him. So
Landry.
Yeah, we can probably go on for a few hours talking about all the bad signings and moves he made. But it's just, you look at the moves he made this year, and you're like, wow, hell of a year one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it excites me for this year because I feel like he's going to be bringing in some guys. We're going to kind of probably have the same reaction to this free agency of who's this guy. And I just, because he comes from that background of scouting and he's just kind of had his finger on the pulse for so many years of just kind of knowing talent. And I just feel like he's going to bring in some guys who are probably on a team more talented than ours, who, you know, played in more of a depth role, and they're just waiting for their opportunity to start. And those are going to be the guys that we sign. And so we're going to be signing some guys this year. I know everybody's been talking about Norwell out of the Panthers, and I think that's probably a possibility. But I think there's probably some other guys. I can't name you any. I'm hoping maybe you guys could, that you know, that they're probably more on a depth role right now because they're young and they're finishing up their rookie contract, hitting free agency, and really just need an opportunity to start. And that's kind of where I see, you know, since we're still kind of in the rebuild mode, we're the perfect program for that kind of player.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
Well, I was looking at, funny you say the free agents, who's going to bring in. I was looking at all the Patriots free agents that they have hitting the market this year, because they don't have much cap space left. So there's definitely going to be some guys from their roster going to be hitting the market. And, you know, they got some good guys hitting the market there. So definitely a good amount of free agents. Norwell, I mean, that's like everybody's dream. Going to probably cost the Colts $12, $13 million a year. But they got
They've got cap space.
That's the beauty, right? I mean, they got the cap space this year to do whatever the hell they want.
Exactly. They've got a lot to do it. Jeremy, thank you for calling, man. I'm going to hop off here because we got some guys on hold. So thank you for calling in, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call. We got another one here from the 208 area code. What's going on? You are on the Colts cast.
Hey, this is Christian calling from Meridi, Idaho again.
Hey, Christian.
Hey, good talking to you guys again. Hey, I was going to mention that I was a little bit surprised when I heard the news today that McDaniels is likely the Colts coach. A lot of the Colt fans, especially in the forums, seemed to be outraged by it, which really surprises me because, you know, some of the criticism of McDaniels, I think that you could almost apply that same thing to Belichick when he was coach of the Browns. I mean, as I reminded people in a post, when Bill Belichick came into the Browns, he cut Bernie Kosar, which was not very popular. He made a lot of false steps there, and if you went by that, he would have never had a head coaching job. I just wanted to say I'm really excited about Josh McDaniels. I think the office system he runs will really help Luck. It'll really help Luck not get sacked so much. And I think the Colts back-to-back years have put together probably the best GM candidate out there, and I would say the best coaching candidate out there.
Yeah, man. Damn, Christian, dropping a Bernie Kosar reference on in a big spot here, buddy. I am absolutely one of the guys that's on board with McDaniels. Now, here's the thing that I thought was interesting. I thought it was really interesting that a lot of people bring up the McDaniels up until now, and they're kind of like wishy-washy about it. And then when they hear the news today that Mularkey's fired, they're like, oh, my God, we're going to lose McDaniels. But it's like, man, you weren't even – you just said like 12 hours ago you didn't even want him, and now you're dying because you think we're going to lose him. So I thought that was interesting as well, and now they're kind of back to just finding a way right there in the middle. But I don't think that we – I mean, look, there was an article today from Greg Doyle from the Indianapolis Star, and he was kind of cutting the whole hire in half. And I think that you can look at this entire situation in both of those ways. You can either look at it as if you understand what you're getting out of Josh McDaniels with his offense, his mind for the game, or you can look at what he's done in the past. There isn't a single there's a reason that first-time head coaches don't often have great tenures in their first land. You know, it just happens. Some of them do. I mean, not everybody is Sean McVay coming out of, you know, a successful offensive program where he was allowed to call the plays for an offensive-minded coach in Washington to where he can go and then he lands the best DC that is, for him, that is basically an assistant head coach for the other side of the ball. That doesn't happen every time in every coach's first tenure. So I think that we've got to soften the stance on what happened with him in Denver. He was a young dude. He's still a young dude. I would ask everybody that is so critical of Josh McDaniels' very first tenure as head coach in Denver, tell me what you did when you were 30 years old and you were given an opportunity to do the right thing, and you kind of took advantage of it because you had the power at this time. I mean, there are a lot of people that fall into those situations. Am I right? I mean, that's how I see it anyway.
Well, you know what, though? It's, you know why a lot of people don't like McDaniels? And it's literally the simplest answer. Because he coaches for the Patriots. And the Patriots
picked
the Colts' ass for the last 8 years with McDaniels as their OC, or last 5 years as McDaniels as their OC. It's really, I honestly think that's the main reason why. But when you look through the Patriots logo, you see a guy who not only has coached up some pretty good quarterbacks. You look at Jimmy Garoppolo now, killing in San Francisco. We have a quarterback on our team right now who had a pretty decent season for a first-year quarterback, or his second year, but his first year as a starter. I mean, all the guys he's developed over here, that Earnhardt Perkins system that he's developed and put in place, even when his first tenure with the Patriots, has been sustainable. It's been working for the last 12 years. If you look at the Patriots, with the exception of them maybe adding some spread concepts, they have had the same system for the last 10 years, and it's worked. And that, I think, has a large part to do with Josh McDaniels. So if you want to, and you know, you can talk. And Matt, you hit the nail on the head when it put the Broncos thing. He was young. He
had more power than he's ever
himself.
Had.
And it's like, just go ahead.
I was just going to say, Matt, on that too. Yeah, back to what you're saying about the Broncos. I think what some people forget is that when McDaniels took over the Broncos, what was he, 32, 33? He was given not only the head coach, he was a head of all personnel. I mean, he was in way over his head.
Yeah,
way
for sure.
Over his head. Now he has Chris Ballard, a strong GM, to work with him. So now McDaniel's in there for the X's and O's now. And that's what he does well. So I think we have to evaluate him on how good he is of a coach, not as a personnel guy.
I totally agree with you, Christian. Hey, man, thank you for the call. We're going to jump off here real quick. We've got some other ones to get to, but thank you for your call, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
You too. Let's run through one more call here. I think I just accidentally hung up on somebody. That's my bad. Sorry, guys. From the 317, hopefully you'll call back.
I think you just walked the 208 here, Matt.
Yeah, I think I did on accident. That's my bad. So if you're listening and you called and you were on wait for like 6 minutes, that's on me. I apologize. Please call back. So let's hit it from the 317, man. You're on the Coltscast. What's happened?
Hey, Matt. This is your buddy, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Mike, what's going on, man?
Hey, thanks for not hanging up on me, man.
Yeah, I guess I got it. They did call back, it looks like, so we're in good shape for them. Sorry, from the 260, that was my bad. You're going to be just a few more minutes. I promise I'll get to you, though. Mike, what's happening, dude? What are your thoughts on all this, man?
Nothing, man. Hey, great conversation tonight, guys. Really, I think you guys are hitting some really good points. I did have a few comments that I wanted to make, and then I'll wrap up with a question and let you guys kind of take it from there. You know, I think both of you are hitting the nail on the head on a few things, and Andrew especially tonight. I'm enjoying some of the things he's saying.
Thanks,
first off, to kind of start with Ballard. I mean, as far as the Colts go, we needed a culture shift within this organization, and I think so many fans were looking at that culture shift to start as far as you know, the head coach position goes. You know, the culture shift's already begun, and it started with Ballard. I'm so impressed with the work he's done. I think he has handled not only this but so many other things as a pro. You know, it's he's not playing games. He's not out there blowing a bunch of smoke. He's not, you know, you don't have a lot of leaks going on within the organization. He's conducting business as a pro is supposed to conduct business. So hats off to him. You know, when I look at somebody like him, it's Ballard could be running the Indianapolis Colts, or he could be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and he's going to hit it out of the park, I think. So I'm really, really – yeah, I'm really enjoying seeing the leadership that he brings. And that kind of goes into Andrew comments a little bit about the coach-GM relationship. I go right back to the Dungy-Polian years. Those were two guys that, you know, were absolutely on the same page with one of the, you know, with each other from day one. And look at the success of that breed versus, you know, a Pagano-Grixon relationship and what that resulted in.
Really, apples and oranges.
Yeah.
You know, I compare Polian and Dungy versus Pagano and Grixon. That's a great point about Polian and Dungy. There's another great relationship between
coach and GM.
Between a coach and a GM. And I bet you if I started looking right now at the last 25 years, because I only thought about the last 10 years, but if you look back at the last 25 years, I bet you all the best teams are going to have strong head coach and GM relationships. It's probably one of the most important things on a team.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, it makes you wonder if Pagano and Grixon would have you know, conducted business as they should have and been on the same page. We may not be having this conversation today. You know, it just makes you wonder what could have been. But I think the failures, there's X's and O issues and things like that with Pagano, don't get me wrong, but the downward spiral started when that relationship went south. Let's be honest with you, you know, mm-hmm. and nothing ever got right from there. And then in comes Ballard, and I just fully believe that this guy has had a plan from day one, and he is now in the process of executing that plan. So this has to have been in the works for a while. You see the fact that you now have coordinators that are coming on board and all that, you know, reportedly, of course. So I'm excited. It sounds like they all have their ducks in a row, and they know what the heck they're doing. So as far as the Colts go, you know, it's kind of funny because earlier in the day, the entire Colts Nation's losing their mind, just like you were talking about, Matt. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, Dr. Phil came in and talked some sense to him, and everything seems to be calm and good now. But going to what caused that, the Tennessee Titans, I'm going to make an unpopular comment here real quick with Colts fans, but you know what? Good on the Tennessee Titans today for having enough backbone to fire their coach.
I'm on board with that for sure.
I looked at that. That's exactly where the Colts have been for the last couple of years. Here's a team that has talent on its roster. They have a mediocre coach who backed their way into the playoffs, and they're talking extension for this guy because they made the playoffs. Well, look what happened. You know, they go to New England, just like the Colts have so many years, get the crap beat out of them, and where are they at now? You know, so good for them for, you know, have enough foresight, have enough guts to say, you know what, we're better than this. We're going to bring in somebody who's gonna take us that next level, because it clearly wasn't working with who they had.
Right. And so I agree with that, Mike, as far as being able, like, pulling the trigger on this dude, like, quickly and getting, you know, I guess you want to say dead weight, like, out of the door quicker. But here's the thing that makes me wonder about this. Was Josh McDaniels their target, John Robinson's target there in Tennessee when he decided to fire Malarkey? And is it possible that he's not going to get him? Now he's possibly set his organization back even further, because listen, here's the side of it that nobody's really talking about. That roster absolutely loved Mike Malarkey. Now you've got a situation for Josh McDaniels, who was known as a non-popular coach in Denver in the past. Let's say that they're on board with trying to hire Josh McDaniels. Okay, they're trying to bring him in. Does Josh McDaniels even want to take that job when 90% of his roster that he walks into is going to be pissed off that they fired the coach that they really liked and actually took them to the second game in the playoffs? I mean, that really resonates with me, because I think that you walk in and this, you've got an older guy in Malarkey, a guy who's been in the NFL for a long time. You can tell. I mean, I saw him and John Robinson at the combine. They seemed to be pretty close, eating dinner together, shooting it back and forth, giggling. They seemed like a pretty well chemistry connected group. I mean, honestly, they did. And then like this, now you've got the roster for Tennessee. They love Malarkey. You get rid of him, and you're going to bring in a younger guy who's been known to be a jerk to his players. I mean, I just don't see that mm-hmm. would fit either one. If Josh McDaniels sees that, he's like, okay, look. It's a great idea. I love the thought of coming into Marcus Mariota and a young squad and an improving Tennessee team, but I'm not going in there and being, you know, the step daddy right now. Everybody's going to be pissed at me. You know, that just doesn't seem to.
I agree, Matt. Yeah, and it all goes back to culture. Ultimately, what's the best fit? He has apparently this relationship with Ballard. You know, so mm-hmm. from the top down, the Colts, I think, are the much better fit. Which kind of segues right into the question I'm going to have, and then I'll shut up and let you guys do what you do best. You know, I don't pretend to know all the X's and O's on McDaniels or any of the guys he's bringing in, but from your guys' viewpoint, what you see with this Colts roster right now, knowing the type of system that McDaniels runs on the offensive side of the ball, who right now on the Colts roster is an absolute home run? Like, this guy is going to excel, or these guys are going to excel in this system. And who do you see on that roster that is just, hey, this guy is not going to fit the system that's going to be brought in here, and we need to either move on from him or use the draft or free agency to fill that spot in order to find those players that are just going to, you know, excel in this new offensive system that we're going to see?
That's a great question. Andrew, I'm going to let you go first. Mike, I'm going to let you go from the line, brother. I'm going to have you hang up and listen, and so we can get this guy on the line that I've had on hold that I hung up on once. So thank you for your call, man. excellent conversation.
Yeah,
thanks for the question, dude. Andrew,
all
hit
right.
on that real quick for me, brother.
I was wishing you'd keep talking for another 10 seconds so I can think about that. That's a good question.
I can hit that up.
I'll hit Marlon Mack.
Oh, you hit me. You took me, man. I had Marlon Mack.
Yeah.
Also, no.
Well, I think I was kind of thinking about this today. I was trying to think about comparisons. I don't think it's going to try to turn this into the Patriots offense, but I was kind of making comparisons. Like T.Y. would be like Brandon Cooks. Doyle's like a poor man's Gronkowski. I was trying to make the comparisons, but I think Marlon Mack, because of he's going to get a lot of, you know, with a spread concept, you're going to get a lot of 5-6 man boxes. And I think a guy like him who's very shifty, very one cut, and really has a really great burst type guy, could really do well in that type of offense. He also, I mean, I have to see more of it. He might be a really good receiver, like a really under receiver. I didn't see too much of it this year, but maybe he's that type of guy who can be like Deion Lewis or White, who can play in the slot and can catch passes. So I don't think there's a guy on the roster I see right now I see as a home run hit, but I would say that Marlon Mack has the potential to be a home run hitter, home run guy for the team. T.Y. and Brandon Cook seem like. Looking now at it, they look like such similar players. So I see that being – I see T.Y. being a decent fit, spreading the field, you know, taking the top off of defense, you know, and giving a lot more chance to guys underneath. So what do you think, Matt?
I agree with you on Marlon Mack for sure and T.Y. as well. I've got a couple here. One, I don't even know what his name is because my guess is he's probably not on the team yet. I think that we're going to have to sign one of these wide receivers in free agency that he deems as a good change of pace guy that can either get down the field or, I mean, I guess both get down the field and be a possession type guy, because that's ultimately what New England bases all of their success on. Quick, get the ball out, get them downfield when you've got the opportunity, but more importantly, eat up yardage at a consistent pace. The other guy is Andrew Luck. It's Andrew Luck. I mean, who is going to benefit more? I mean, and it sounds stupid because he's our guy, right? But he is a guy who he's been out for a season. He had just, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to Brian Schottenheimer here because you guys all know about my love affair with him. I really think that Brian did a great job with Luck. I thought that he did very good getting him to the finer intricacies of the position. Now, saying that, you add on McDaniels to that, going forward, and you've got a guy who's those quick timing passes are going to get his completion percentage up. He's going to have him looking at all through his progressions in a very methodic manner. And I think that Andrew Luck's going to be one of the guys, and by virtue, every one of his weapons are going to excel in this system. So I think those for sure. Let's get this. Go ahead, brother. Go
just
ahead.
One quick thing before you take the next call, just to piggyback on that. You're 100% right about Luck being the best or the biggest benefactor of this new offense, but it will be a change for him because he has never been in an offense like this.
Right.
This type of offense is going to – it's really completely different. At Stanford, it was all under center, play action based. I mean, with Chud, it was, you know, Chud, it was a lot of two tight end sets type stuff, you know, not a lot of spread looks or Earnhardt Perkins stuff. That's a Charlie Weiss system from back in the day. So, and they've had Pep Hamilton, who's Stanford, you know, and Bruce Arians, who's, you know, gunslinger down the field, vertical offense. He's never been in an offense that's a lot horizontal and quick rhythmic passes. So it's going to be really different for him, but it's, like you said, it's going to be beneficial for him because, I mean, a guy, you know, has taken a pounding over the last few years. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw it in there.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick 5-second break here again, and then we're going to get to our last caller, who hopefully doesn't yell at me because I think I hung up on him a little bit ago. So. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Thank you for joining the Colts Cast from the 260. Did I hang up on you already?
Hey, guys. This is Blake from the Fort Wayne area. You might have hung up on me. I about pulled at you, Matt, from the Jaguars game and tossed my phone to the other room. But
I'm never going to live that
down. This is Blog Talk Radio, man. This thing ain't worth anything. But no, you guys are cool. And I also, I wanted to say thank you for everything you guys do over at Stampede Blue. Love the podcast. I know a lot of people appreciate what you guys are doing, because there's not, you know, a lot of podcasts out there that are, you know, in depth about the Colts and that are positive and really.
Hey Matt, what did I tell you before the show?
You know, of those
right.
people.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. We all appreciate that. Really, very much.
Yeah, I mean, big time. You guys are doing a great job. So I've got kind of like a comment and then two kind of questions, sort of like the last caller you guys had. The first one mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to touch on was sort of Ballard's relationship with the Patriots in general. And it just mm-hmm. seems like, you know, with the past two trades and now the thing with McDaniels, and I saw something from Albert Breer earlier today talking about, you know, him talking to Bill Belichick, you know, over the past year about McDaniels. And, you know, maybe I might have misread that, but I just thought, you know, in the past you would not have seen anybody, any kind of personnel that was, you know, with the Colts dealing with the Patriots as extensively as he has. And I think that's to a great credit to him, you know, having the courage to kind of approach, you know, that organization, not being intimidated. So it's kind of cool how he doesn't see, you know, the past as something that's going to hold him back from making his team better. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought, you know, what were you guys' comments on that and thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it's a huge step in the right direction, and not just because it's the Patriots, and almost to the contrary, simply because it's another NFL team that you're going to have to continue to deal with. And very seldom do teams trade within their own division or within their own conference, especially within their own division. But you've got to have an open working relationship with teams, and you can't be a childish prick like Grigson was about every single situation that came up. I mean, honestly, that really set so many people back, in my opinion, away from him. There were, when he got the GM job in Indy, there were people in Philly from where he came that their jaws were on the floor. They could not believe
he got a GM. Yeah, they were shocked. I read that too.
Yeah, they were completely flabbergasted that he was given the job there. So it is a good thing just that Ballard is who he is. He's a guy who will work with anybody, and he will do what he can to put the positive twist on it, to see what he can do to benefit his own team. And look, the Colts ultimately in the end, you can say that they fleeced him on a couple different trades. You can say that the Colts won the Jacoby Brissett Dorsett trade by a mile, simply because you had an active quarterback who was better than Scott Tolzien for all season. Then you can ultimately say that they fleeced them on the Dwayne Allen trade, because the Colts got a draft pick for a guy who absolutely had almost zero production with the Patriots this year to this point. So I think that you look at that and is that, is that Ballard like kind of being the smartest guy in the room, or is that simply just Ballard listening, talking, and trying to get everything that he can for his team while also, maintaining a working relationship with the other team? Andrew, what are your thoughts, brother?
I think just, you know, when you sign Jabal Sheard and then you see the two trades of the Patriots, I mean, you kind of try to connect some dots together. But now you see the McDaniels hiring, you see that he has relationships with guys on that team, well, especially McDaniels. So I think it's all kind of coming together. Not that it really makes a big difference when you think about it, but I just thought that was an interesting point, because it seems like Ballard does have a really good relationship with the Patriots. And about the Patriots, it seems like we're going to have to deal with them for a few more years as the,
right.
you know, the beast of the AFC. So you have to take down the king. That's mm-hmm. the thing. So to take down the king, you have to build a team that can beat the king. That sounds really stupid and really vague, but that's the reality.
Not much more
I can really add to this besides what Matt said. So I'll just let you guys take it there.
All right. Well, I just thought, I also had a thought that maybe, you know, possibly McDaniels would have quite the insight on how they operate as an offense. You know, I'm not saying that he'll be able to absolutely help us there, but it's interesting to think that maybe he might be able to help us get past them as a defense, you know, kind of with the philosophy that, but, you know, Bill Belichick's always going to try to change those things. He's not going to let that be something that.
I always take that comment with a grain of salt. I mean, we've seen Bill O'Brien fall flat on his face every time he plays the Patriots, and he knows the offense inside out. Romeo Crennel was spent many years with that team. Vrabel, I mean, the Houston Texans never do a thing against them. I mean, whenever you see, former Patriots, Mangini, I mean, all these guys who coached with the Patriots and then against them, they never seem to do anything. So while that's interesting to note, I never really seem to think that's like a possibility almost that he's going to be able to know their inside stuff. I think most of the biggest reason why I think the Patriots always win at the end of the day is because they're the most unique in terms of play calling. They study meticulously every single week. They know the weaknesses of the other team better than any other team in the league. So I think I just don't think the inside scoops can make a huge difference when it comes to.
I think you made some good points there for sure.
The other thing about that, if I may, is that we have to understand what's going on right now in New England as well. Okay, so we get McDaniels, somebody else gets Matt Patricia, most likely the Lions. That's going to be a new defensive coordinator with new tendencies and everything else anyway. So a lot of that's going to be blown up. We're going to be able to understand what Bill Belichick, you know, or McDaniels, I guess is what I mean, is going to understand what Bill Belichick likes to do with his team. But he, of all people, is going to know that Bill Belichick's one of the most unpredictable people in the NFL right now. And that's why he's been so successful. He's going to put a new coordinator in there with new tendencies, with new likes and dislikes of the personnel in there. And whether or not Bill Belichick decides to possibly take the play calling or just whatever happens, you know, we don't know, I guess is what I'm saying.
And that's going to change everything. One other thing too, and anybody who's thinking that because they're losing McDaniels and Patricia that they're going to, you know, maybe take a step backwards or something, they're going to be just as good, if not better. You know, these guys, they know how to turn over. Look at the last 15 years, how many offensive coordinators or how many, you know, defensive coordinators they've had, how many people go in and out. You know, it's they're a machine there. So
right.
The Patriots are going to be the same Patriots team until Belichick and Brady break up.
Yeah, there's an equipment manager in there that could be an expert play caller somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting stuff. Well, I guess the second point I was going to look at is earlier in the week, I don't know who it was, came out of the port talking about McDaniels wanting to have, you know, a strong sense of roster control. And that, to me, was like a red flag. I'm like, hey, I don't want anybody taking control out of Ballard's hands as he's done such a great job in his first year and I trust him so much. I'm like, that's kind of a deal breaker to me. So I'm kind of curious what your guys' thoughts are about, you know, roster control and, you know, how much you think McDaniels will have and how much you think Ballard will retain.
Go ahead and hit this one first, Andrew.
I said earlier in the podcast, I think it's just they have to have a great relationship. It's whoever's in charge of the roster, the personnel, or, you know, the finances, honestly doesn't even matter because the head coach and the GM need to be on the same page at the end of the day. And I've said it a couple times today, and I'll say it again. They need to be on the same page. Yes, I mean, should Ballard run the roster? He did a great job this year. Yes, he should continue to do it. But the reality is him and McDaniels need to be on the same page, and it seems like they are.
Yeah, I think when you look at roster control, I mean, not only do you have to understand that that's why Ballard was so highly coveted in his time previous to getting the Colts job. So this is a guy who everybody, and I think you touched on this a moment ago, this is why the guy's here. Not only is that why Jim Irsay hired him, but that's why everybody wanted him. He's a guy who knows he comes from that scouting background we talked about earlier. He's a guy who can understand people. He meshes well with people. He is the guy who is the roster control in Indianapolis. If McDaniels is wanting to talk about roster control, basically what he's saying is I don't want to be shut out of the process, in my opinion, because Josh McDaniels, he has to understand. If he learned everything that he supposedly learned in his time from Denver, he also learned that you can't have 20 different meals in one sitting at the table. You have to be able to inch your way into each additional situation as it comes, and that is going to be a much more reasonable path to success, in my opinion, because you can't have everything all at once. I mean, we've seen coaches fail miserably with that, where they go in, they get the head coach, they get the roster control, they get the GM powers. Very few people have done it other than Belichick. And I mean, I would even guess to say even fewer are going to win while doing that in the future. So I don't think that Josh McDaniels can be dumb enough, and I say that kind of tongue in cheek, to assume that he's going to walk in to West 56 or 58th Street and have everybody just saying, what can I get you? Who do you want? What's all this? Ultimately, that's not happening. That's also a reason why we've seen that you don't bring in necessarily a president of player personnel, because you've got everything you need in Chris Ballard. You're going to make a really sticky situation when you start bringing in guys hungry for a piece of a pie that has largely already been taken by Chris Ballard. And in my opinion, they don't deserve it. They don't deserve it. So I just don't think that Josh is – my total opinion on this is that there's no way that Josh McDaniels could reasonably come in and ask for that and expect to not get laughed out of the building.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I would expect. And then for my last sort of a point, I guess, is I wonder if we're done seeing the names of guys like Dave Tobe or Chris Richard being associated with the Colts anyway. I know we interviewed Richard, and it looks like earlier today that Ken Norton Jr. was actually hired as the Seahawks defensive coordinator, so it looks like Richard's out of a job. So I'm curious if we will see any of the, you know, previous guys' names associated with anything, you know, be brought back up in any kind of facet or form.
Richard was he was actually released last week, wasn't he, Matt?
I believe so, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, but
at least Colby wasn't going to come back.
I was thinking today too, actually. I'm really curious to see what McDaniels does with the staff, because I mean, having a great staff around him is going to be key to his success, you know, just because the thing I love about Belichick, and I know it's going to be tough to say here for some people, but or Belichick or Harbaugh, they know, and I think a great head coach in general, is that they know how to delegate and give responsibilities to his assistant coaches. You can't be a head coach who tries to do it all. So I'm very curious to see who he brings in, who he trusts. Because he's not going to be – I wouldn't be surprised if he passed along the play calling, because Belichick didn't do the play calling. Belichick really didn't call any of the plays, didn't make – I mean, I believe I heard on his do your job thing that he left a lot of the key personnel decisions on a week-to-week basis to his coordinators. The red zone stuff was left to position coaches. Like, he's a guy who knows how to pick the right people and give them the right responsibilities. So I'm very curious to see who McDaniels brings in, because that'll tell us a lot about who he trusts, and we'll see from there if he's willing to give up a lot of his responsibilities.
And just to cut in real quick while we're on the talk of bringing guys in, a little bit of, I wouldn't say breaking news, we've already been talking about this throughout the show, but Dion Orsini of ESPN just tweeted out, it may not be NFL official, but it's Facebook official, Matt Eberflus to be part of Indy's coaching staff, with a picture of him. And apparently there's like a Colts ribbon in the corner of the picture. And thank you at Bodacious Bryce for tagging me in that, so that we could talk about that on the air real quick. But that's kind of a done deal. I just now saw that, and it was like 35 minutes ago. So I'm just running through Twitter real quick while we're talking this to see if there's anything new, and that is definitely new. So, you know, that's interesting. I mean, it looks like all is kind of said and done, folks. I mean, it looks not, you know, I've been one of those guys who's kind of thought that I just can't take anything.
His wife
for
posted
sure.
The picture.
Was that his wife?
Yeah, his wife posts the picture.
Okay.
And
that's her, and she posted the Indianapolis thing, and that's pretty official, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that is.
Yeah,
so
he might be getting
like, I mean, she would know,
too.
Right?
She might be in on it.
Yeah,
it could be a conspiracy.
I appreciate her.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, man, thank you for the call so much. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words. We're hoping
to
keep this thing going, for sure.
Oh, for sure, guys. Thank you so much. And Matt, you know, easy with the trigger finger, man. Make sure you're hitting the right button.
Right. Thank you so much, man. So that's kind of interesting now. So we've got a hardcore, an officialization that we've got a new possible defensive coordinator. And
from the
From the wife. So let's not say defensive coordinator yet, but let's definitely say that
part of the staff.
Yeah, some sort of the staff here. So,
I don't think he's making a just a simple lateral move. Most
no,
don't.
No.
Especially
right.
when the coaching staff in Dallas is still in place. So I would have to say that he's coming for either a nice hefty pay raise and or a defensive coordinator job.
Yep, I think so too. And that's about as official as you're going to get. That not only puts in place him for what we are presuming to be the defensive coordinator position, but it also puts in place McDaniels. It looks to put a solid stake in the ground that McDaniels is the new Indianapolis Colts head coach. So I was almost about
to a Facebook post from the wife
right.
of our new defensive coordinator. Fantastic. Gotta love
it. I was almost like to say through the last caller there, I'm one of those guys that really wants to see something from the Colts Twitter account that we have hired Josh McDaniels before I go on and believe it. But as soon as I do
think,
that,
I don't think they're allowed to, are they? No, they can't. They can't announce it while McDaniels is still
they can't announce McDaniels. They can't announce McDaniels, but they can announce Eberflus, who, he's free to do whatever he likes. So, but connecting
what happened
the
with
dots,
Dan Quinn when he went to the Super Bowl and then he became the Falcons head coach? They didn't announce it, but everyone knew he was going to sign with them. I guess that's what's going to happen with us, too.
Right. Kind of the same with Shanahan last year as well, going to the Niners from Atlanta. So that kind of brings, some closure to the Colts head coaching hiring process, I think, that for the most part, because I don't know that we would have heard anything about Eberflus had we not been told that he would have been Josh McDaniels' choice for D.C. So that's interesting.
No,
like
I would have never guessed him. Actually, when I made my article, I was looking through all the candidates, all the possible candidates, and I did not put Eberflus in there. So she'll show you my my intelligence as well as how sneaky the Colts are sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. This is just a little thing, and I'm something I want to jump into, and thanks, Mike, for hitting me up with this as well, because this is a great point as well. We've got this situation with how coaches are hired during the playoff process. This to me is now, if I'm any of the teams that are still left in the playoffs in the postseason, I don't want my coordinator, I don't want my quarterback's coach, I don't want my position coaches talking or looking at any other teams, because I want them completely and 100% focused on what our job is at hand. With getting a Super Bowl victory. But on the other hand, there has to be able to have some behind-the-scenes talking, I think, once you say everybody else can talk, but those who are in the playoffs can't. Is there anything that they can do to change this, you think, or is this kind of just the way it's going to be, Andrew?
I think it's just going to the way it's going to be. I mean, we saw last year in the college, remember the whole Lane Kiffin dilemma with Florida Atlantic, and Nick Saban just fired him a week before the championship. I think coaches have their different ways of approaching it. If you're Nick Saban, you fire the guy. But I think that's just the way it's going to stay. Well, I mean, what's the rule change they would do? They would allow them to agree with a team, or then what happens from there? Then he builds his staff while you're still in your playoff run. I think the way that it's going right now is the way it's going to stay.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is something to think about, but there really would have to be some really unique and inventive ways to kind of try to work around that without completely ruining anything that you've got going with your team, most definitely. So is there any other things that
every
you can...
rule in the NFL, there's a way of getting around it. That tampering. I mean, that when the Ndamukong Suh with the Dolphins a few years ago, they caught him, with their hand in the cookie jar because they were talking to him and signed too early. But the reality is, everybody, with every major rule in the NFL, everyone's trying to find a way around it, and that's never going to change. So I'm not holding my breath on any changes when it comes to coaching hires or free agent talking periods. So.
Right. It is interesting to think about, though. Is there anything else that you can think of that we've gone through today that, you know, whether it be with the coaching hire, like that seems now to be official, Andrew, or anything that we've got coming up. I know that I've been kind of focusing on free agency right now, kind of trying to do one thing at a time, finishing the regular season, talking about the regular season, now getting into the next line of business, which is free agency for the most part for the Colts after the Josh McDaniels hire. And I've got a couple free agency articles coming up this week, kind of trying to talk about some possible targets. You got anything in the works right now, my man?
Yeah, I think that I still have to make the full switch to draft mode. I'm going to try and get out a draft article this week. I was going to get one last week, but I figured with all the underclassmen declaring, I was going to get screwed up somewhere or another. So I'm going to, wait till that deadline passes, and I'll probably come with a top 8 or top 10 at each position in the draft. Some really, really good, if you want to talk about the draft real quick, I mean, just some really, really nice positions this year. You know, you look at, running back is phenomenal. Offensive line, the interior offensive line, are you kidding me? Some of these guys coming out on the interior offensive line, Mason Cole, Billy Price, Quinton Nelson, of course, Martez Ivy, Frank Ragnow, Michael Dieter. There's a lot of, for the Colts positions and needs, you know, when we talk about edge rusher, offensive line, running back, there's some really, really good guys out there. And my wide receiver one right now is Anthony Miller, which most people wouldn't actually disagree with, but he's another guy too who I'm just huge on. So we'll have to see. I'll have to sit down and actually think and put a list together, but I'll probably come up with something draft related in the future. One thing I will say quickly,
go ahead.
I'm very curious to see who McDaniels picks as his offensive coordinator. Will it be Chad O'Shea from the Patriots, who's a wide receiver coach? O'Shea was the guy who, during the Patriots, probably was the same this year, during their last two Super Bowl runs, he was in charge of the red zone. All the red zone plays, designs, and the breakdowns and scouting, he was in charge of that area. So I'm very curious to see who McDaniels trusts. Who's he going to bring? Is he going to go back to one of his old guys like Mike McCoy, who's on the market? There's a lot of different guys I'm very curious to see. Will he get in a quarterback coach? Will he go for DeFilippo? I think there's a lot of options. And as we saw today, we really, really don't know who it is going to be. Like, Eberflus would not have been a guy I would have guessed. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely not would have been a guy I would have guessed.
I'd never heard of
him. Yeah, so I'm just really curious to see who's going to choose as OC, because if the Colts are going to turn this offense around, let's turn this team around, they're going to need a good offense. So I'm very curious to see who he picks.
Yeah, one of the and kind of just touching on the draft real quick with me, this is kind of an interesting situation between in the relationship between free agency and the draft coming up, because there are positions in this draft where the Colts kind of have to hit a home run on, because there's not a lot available in free agency. Most notably, in my opinion, is the offensive tackle position. You've got Connor Williams from Texas. You've got McGlinchey out of Notre Dame. And then Orlando Brown is another guy. So, yeah. So we've got opportunities here in the first round. This is even making me feel even that much more, serious, I guess you could say, for a lack of better words, since my brain's going numb right now. They have to get one of these guys and trade back from three in order to acquire
probably
a couple different
that's
guys the in
best
the top
move.
15.
Sometimes it's tough to find a dance partner, but that's all signs point to that being the best move for the Colts, picking up some good draft picks, and you're still going to get a top guy. One name, though, I will throw out to you and all the people listening that might be very intriguing is Nate Solder, former Patriot. A current Patriot.
Right.
And the Patriots, I'm telling you, they're going to have some tough decisions this offseason. They have about, what, $15 million in cap space? And they're going to have to re-sign Butler, Solder. I had the list before. Solder, Butler, Burkhead, Batamosi, Slater, Fleming, Amendola, Lewis. And they got only $15 million in cap space, and they got to draft some guys too. So they're going to be really tight this year. So they're not going to keep all these guys.
So the only thing about
The one name I'm going to put out there is Nate Solder, because
the only thing about Solder is his age doesn't really match up to what Ballard's process kind of yields. The only kicker in there could be McDaniels and his, you know, his understanding of Solder, and be like, look, this guy's very much worth it. We need him on our offensive line. So I think
pretty
it's a possibility.
Player. I mean, I'm not like going to vouch for him. If they didn't sign him, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but a pretty consistent player. He's going to be 30 years old, experience as right tackle and left tackle. Really solid overall player. The big reason I'm bringing him up is mostly because of that Patriots connection.
Right. And that's, it's valid, because we're going to see, you know, whether people, you know, and it even kind of cracks me up that people were saying no to McDaniels. Well, no to McDaniels just because he's a Patriot. We need to understand that we've got Jabal Sheard, we've got Barcavius Mingo, we've got a couple other former Patriots.
That's,
you know,
true, actually. Mingo, too.
Jacoby,
I forgot about
Brissett.
That. True.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they're going to be coming, guys. So get
Who's a better candidate then? If you look at it, if you want to stack resumes, and I'm a big Tobe fan, or Tube, another guy whose name I can't pronounce properly, Tobe Tube.
Me either.
If you want to look at resumes, just look at the resumes. Take away the names and look at resumes. And you put McDaniel's resume next to all the other candidates. No one even touches his resume.
Right.
The ring.
That's true.
None of the do any of the other candidates even have a ring?
No. I don't.
Shermer, does he have a ring? Patricia does, obviously, because of the Patriots.
I was going to say.
Dude, does Tuber? I mean, can't pronounce his name.
Whatever the hell we're calling.
Yeah.
The ghost, because everybody was talking about him for the longest time.
Take away all
now.
The names and put the resumes next to each other and look at who has the best resume and who has the most experience. And you're going to come away with McDaniels each time. Whether you like him or not, he might be the worst person on the planet. We do not know that yet. Okay, he might be the worst leader on the planet. We don't know that. But if you want to just look at pure resumes right now, which is what really us as analysts or fans can really know, could really look at, because we don't know him as a person. We don't know him as a leader yet. Like, besides a couple clips every now and then. But if you want to look purely just on paper, you cannot discredit what he's done. McDaniels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 110%, man. Look, dude, I think we kind of bookended this bad boy, and we got a little bit of somewhat breaking news in the middle of it. So I think this is called a success with some great calls. Sorry. I hope that the guy that I answered there towards the end was the guy that I hung up on, or else I'd feel really bad and somebody just doesn't think that I wanted their call. But thank you guys all again for fantastic calls, fantastic conversation. As we do these live shows, we do have a kick-ass setup for you this week. We've got Joe Marino coming on from FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting later on in the week. We've got Ollie Connolly coming on. He is also a big timer here, man. This guy has a ton of information on just so many people that are going to be set for the draft. So we've got some excellent, excellent draft talk lined up for you guys this week. It should be an absolute blast. Andrew, excellent tonight, man. Thank you so much for joining me, dude.
Matt,
you were great.
Always great coming on here. Show's kicking ass. It's going to be a fun off season.
It is. I'm excited for it. And thank you guys all for paying attention, calling in, and just enjoying it and being part of the process here with this show. You guys are helping it grow so much. Make sure you guys get on iTunes if you get an opportunity and give us a rating and review. Those help too. But more importantly, just continue to call in. And I'll keep putting posts on Stampede Blue, and I'll keep putting throwing tweets out there to allow you guys to know that the days that we're doing these live shows. But most importantly, get yourself to Stampede Blue to get all the best in Colts coverage, both the analysis and opinion, where we've got an excellent staff, a lot of great minds, and a lot of guys that really want to improve the coverage that you guys are getting. So
best Colts site on the web, bar none.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Andrew, once again, thanks for joining me tonight, man. I had a blast.
Always.
We've talked about this. This is going to be one of the best and most important off seasons in Indianapolis Colts history, I believe. We're looking at a GM right now that we're trying to turn into ultimately a modern-day Bill Polian. We're trying to get a coach in here that is an innovator and that is unique in his approach, a guy that can take the offense to the next level with our franchise quarterback, man. And you know what? I think that the
pieces are in place. The pieces are in place.
That's right. The train starts to roll now. So thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the Stampede Blue Colts Cast.